70-something. Now.
Yeah, we're not necessarily going to put them out in the order we record them, so we don't even know, really. But Nighthawks, something-something. Four web dings and a funeral. Three, two, one.
Yeah, dude, I've always really felt like... We're going to talk family gatherings this week. Specifically, this is going to come out around Thanksgiving, and it's actually about a funeral, which I don't know what your family Thanksgivings are like. But sometimes, halfway through the ball game, we do have to kind of poke Dad with a stick. And I was just thinking, because of a hilarious musical mix-up we'll detail later, I was just thinking, like, what's it like to be Mrs. Bradley Knoll? I know that's a leap, right? But did you lose someone in high school and there wasn't much to say? Like, you had to have the funeral where, like, he liked music and snowboarding, you know? I mean, I'm not trying to be funny or unfunny right now, just reflecting on the human condition. But to have a music empire that's based on, like, somebody's product in their early 20s, and to forever have to defend a 20-year-old's way of life as you age, I can't help but think that that's like something, that's like a curse a witch would put on you.
You heard it here first, folks. Bradley Knoll's wife cursed by a witch.
I don't even know if that's a person that exists. There might just be a business manager or something. Or sublime with Rome, or Sublime should go to Rome and not come back. I don't know.
KOKW calling. I'm on international frequency. Come in.
I am Torgo. I take care of the place while the master is away.
He's trying to cheat us, Pepe. All this talk is so he can get a better price, so he can make fools of us.
Yes, so easy to make a fool of me. Why don't you try it sometime?
Well, I got something done. I got a job at Mr. Greenfeld's sporting goods store, and he promised to do anything he can to help me to get to Texas.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
I had a reason for inviting each guest. I wanted kind of a cross-section. They share one thing. They all need money. Now let's see if they're brave enough to earn it.
And you call this a party?
Could be.
That's one of those things, like, Sublime is the musical equivalent of The Crow. Like, I know now it's not as good as I once thought it was, but it's very steeped in time and place.
Mm-hmm.
It's sense memory, like the smell of mom's cookies cooking. If you had a cookie cooking mom, or the smell of fresh deer being butchered on your kitchen table if you had my mom. She made cookies sometimes. I'm being unfair, and the homemade venison is quite lovely in its own right. But anyway, I digress. I think because maybe we're watching a movie about anxiety about public speaking. We're looking today. We're in the conceptual Nighthawks Cafe, where the coffee and the pie are fake, but the conversations are real, just posted on the internet. We reserve the right to record to improve service. You can find us on the internet, specifically Stitcher, iTunes, Spotify, all those podcatchers. Podcatcher. This is like a dog catcher. Dop catcher. We're coming to you live on tape delay as a proud member of the Hello Sweetie Podcast Network. You can also find us at nighthawkspodcast.com. Who is bloviating at you? It's I, Matt Foster. I am the westerly half of Nighthawks Podcast. I am far geographically closer to the ocean than the other member of the Nighthawks Podcast, who is...
Yeah, you are. My name is Trevor Trujillo, and I am actually abroad right now. I am at large, as they say.
Thank you for pausing, but I'm not swinging at either of those slow pitches, okay? Babe Ruth don't do no wiffle ball.
Mm. Well, yeah. Anyways, I'm actually not kidding. I'm on assignment this week, so I am actually recording from very utilitarian hotel room in the community of Thermopolis, Wyoming.
Are you staying in their infamous Holiday Inn?
I am not. The Holiday Inn has become a Days Inn in recent years, and we may get in trouble for this, but if I can find the jingle, I'll put it up there. It's something that Matt and I heard a lot of while working in television. A funny little jingle involving the Holidays Inn in beautiful Thermopolis, Wyoming, which is it has a feature film tie-in. It was made famous in the 1982 Bugs Bunny's third movie, 1001 Rabbit Tales. It's a very small town known for colorful regional history, environs rich in dinosaur fossils, and it is also the home of an active geothermal hot springs. It also smells funny everywhere. So that's not like a valid complaint of the room. Like, every room smells funny in this town.
If you've ever had some old scrambled eggs and then farted on them...
Yeah. I mean, my love to the people of Thermopolis. They've been nothing but hospitable and kind. But yeah, man, it smells funky in this town. Gotta love that. Just that deep sulfur bubbling up through the hot water smell.
It smells like Hades on a good day.
Well, Matt, we have a little trailer to take a look at. This, at the time of the record, this had just dropped this week, so it's fairly new. But, Matt, what did you think of the trailer for Detective Pikachu?
You mean Deadpool 3 Pikachu Adventure? You mean Pika-Pool?
Yes, Ryan Reynolds is the voice.
You mean Ryan Reynolds as the Merc with a Meowth? Sorry, sometimes it takes three tries.
You got there. It works.
I wonder how many of those I've been beaten to.
Welcome to Rhyme City, a celebration of the harmony between humans and Pokemon.
Tim, your dad was a legend in this precinct. If you were anything like your dad...
I'm not.
I remember. You wanted to be a Pokemon trainer when you were young.
Yeah, that didn't really work out. Someone there? Whoever you are... I know how to use this.
Oh, jeez.
Here we go.
I know. You can't understand me, but put down the stapler or I will electrocute you.
Did you just talk?
Whoa. Did you just understand me?
Oh, my God. You can understand me.
Stop.
I've been so lonely.
They try to talk to me all the time. All they hear is Pika Pika.
You can hear him, right?
Pika Pika.
Pika Pika Pika, he's adorable.
You're adorable. They can't understand me, kid.
Can no one else hear him? I don't need a Pokemon, period.
Then what about a world-class detective? Because if you want to find your pops, I'm your best bet.
We're gonna do this, you and me.
It brought us together, and that magic is called hope. Listen up.
So, yeah, Detective Pikachu, starring none other than the vocal stylings of one Ryan Reynolds. Matt, we are probably a little out of the target demographic here, but as somebody who is probably, maybe not, I don't know, maybe you're into Pokemon, I don't know, but what did the trailer do for you?
I'm neither into nor a hater of Pokemon. I do think it is, like, certain point of view, it is kind of like dogfighting, you know. But but no, this is very strange because it's like a Roger Rabbit type device where the Pokemon and the humans live together, and it's the humans are normal, like it's shot normally,
live action.
Then there's an attempt at making live action Pokemon that interact with the world that look kind of, they're CGI, but they're pretty uncanny. And the Pikachu is really cute. And through some shenanigans, I don't know if it's going to be a big style wishing machine or a bonk on the head or what have you. Normally, all humans can hear when Pokemon talk is the Pokemon saying its namesake epithet, like Pika Pika, is what Pikachus say. But for some reason, this particular Pikachu, who is obsessed with becoming a detective, and appears to be like a human society hobbyist, like a reverse Pokemon trainer, circumstances conspire so that he can make himself intelligible to one particular human who then questions his own sanity. So vice versa, you know, it's the old fashioned look who's talking Chew.
Look who's talking now.
That was a real one.
They're all real ones, Matt.
I mean, that was an actual Look Who's Talking sequel. I think it was the third one with the dogs.
Yeah, you're right.
look who's talking for. It's a talking dead horse.
Hello. I'm Mr. Red.
Oh.
But no, to me, this looks like a lot of fun. Somewhat like cynic bait. I could almost feel like we're putting this out here to tempt you to hate on it, but I don't. I think it looks fine.
Yeah, I think it looks good, too. And especially... Now, I think I might have been marginally more into the Pokemon than you were. And it's weird because I think I was just, like, maybe 1 year out of being kind of the target for it. But my girlfriend in high school was super into it, and I got super into it, and it's an adorable little creature, and the cartoon was kind of fun to watch, and the video game was kind of fun. I never followed it much beyond that. You know, once it got past Red and Blue, I was doing other things, but...
Oh, you know what? I played a lot of Pokemon Puzzle League.
Yeah?
It was like Tetris and, like, Dr. Mario in a tube. That was a fun game.
And yeah, I mean, there have, and I think I even played a little bit of the card game once upon a time, but I'm not in deep on the Pokemon paint. You know, it was a passing fancy of mine. Having said that, the fact that I'm excited to see this movie, I think this is going to do really well. And actually, at the time that this dropped, I had made the comment that I think I just watched the trailer for the highest grossing movie of 2019. Because it looks like it's going to have a ton of appeal. It looks like something that the kids are going to be able to watch and that the parents are going to be able to enjoy. It's something that the fans are going to like. But then I saw what the release schedule was for it. And Detective Pikachu is coming out, I think it's exactly 1 week after the next Avengers installment. Which I think is going to be a pretty big movie. So it'll be interesting to see those two duke it out, and I might just give the edge to the Avengers, but I'm really interested to see how this does.
I don't know, though, because like a secret to box office gross is that kids' movies play forever.
That's true.
So they don't open like a superhero movie does, but they stay out until another prominent kids' movie comes out, because the theater always wants to keep one, like... What's the one I just noticed was still playing? Incredibles is still playing in the theater around here.
Yeah, I think it just left here, and I think it might even be out on Blu-ray this week or recently.
Dude, I have at the corner of my street, I don't know if you noticed it the one or two times you might have had a chance to drive by, but there is a second-run theater with like a two-bedroom apartment over it.
Oh, my God.
On the corner of my street. Like imagine the theater if it had a furnished apartment in the balcony.
Huh.
And I'm like, just put it on the market. Just put it on the market.
That would be amazing. I'd love that.
Wyoming has a rhinoceros. He hangs around Thermopolis. Not a metropolis, but they got a great Days Inn.
Enjoy your hot water holiday at the Days Inn Thermopolis. Days Inn has it all with our two-night package starting at $219 during the week or $229 weekends, including our prime rib dinner for two, champagne, and continental breakfast.
Come check out Thermopolis. They got a great Days Inn.
What are you watching?
Hey, what are you reading?
Tell me, what are you loving this week?
What are you putting in your ears?
Welcome to The Box. I'm Charity.
I'm Crystal.
I'm Rebecca. On The Box, we talk about all the media we love, old and new.
Hear our hottest takes on the classic movies, new TV shows, our favorite podcasts, and what we've downloaded this week.
Subscribe on iTunes at HSPN The Box or wherever you get your podcasts to hear us every week.
And don't forget, too much TV will rot your brain.
A proud member of the Hella Sweetie Podcast Network.
Good evening, podcast listeners. Trevor T. Trujillo just reminding you before we kick off the rest of the show, we are watching Eulogy this evening. We forgot to do a spoiler warning, but folks, there are spoilers throughout this episode. There's no formal spoiler curtain. So if this is one you wanted to hit cold, be sure to hit Eulogy and then come back and visit us. You'll be glad you did.
Okay, this is Eulogy Part 2, Slate, Take 2, for a total of 2.5 takes. Eulogy, 3, 2, 1.
So, now that we're done talking fuzzy little mouse detectives, what is that thing? Is it a mouse?
I think it's a mouse.
Gerbil?
It's cute. I mean, it's adorable. But anyways, we're going to get into the meat and potatoes, the feature dish, the entree of tonight's episode.
The meat and funeral potatoes?
You're on fire tonight. We're going to be talking about...
That's a Utah reference.
This movie is a little slept on. It did not make a huge splash when it came out, and it was actually... dare I say, critically reviled. It was pretty savaged pretty hard. But it's something...
Yeah, they took a hard and unjust poop on this one.
Yeah, and I had not seen it before. Matt had, but we're watching Eulogy from 2004. This is a movie written and directed by Michael Clancy. And Matt, this is his only listed feature film credit.
I can't figure out, like... I mean, we've seen some stuff that guys with only one or two credits made before, mm-hmm. right? It happens.
Yeah.
What was the other one that we did kind of recently?
It was the guy who wrote and directed Gross Point Blank. He only had one other credit to his name.
Said he had such a bad time that he was going to stick to commercials.
No, but, who was that? That was somebody else.
That was the director of Hackers, I believe.
No, we didn't do Hackers.
Oh, we're going to.
Oh, no, that was the director of Mystery Men.
Yeah, I think you're right. But what's weird about this one is who this guy got to direct for just directing one movie.
Yeah, the cast is amazing in this. Michael Clancy, if you're out there and listening, we'd like you to work more if you're open to that idea. This is, I think, a very competently made movie. I thought the script was really clever. Just a content warning up front. Number one, it's a very dark comedy. It makes light of several terrible things, and it asks us to laugh about them. It asks us to laugh about terrible people doing terrible things. Set up on the altar of comedy for this movie are things like confused sexuality, bigotry, toxic masculinity, suicide, depression, pornography, dark family secrets, hypocrisy, basically some of the crappiest relatives you could ask for. So on some of that content, viewer discretion is advised. But just to touch on that before we kick off, these are things in this movie that I don't think anybody would laugh at if it was happening to them. But then again, aren't most movies like that? You know, Indiana Jones, it's fun to watch that guy on screen. I don't know that he's having a ton of fun getting out of Nazi situations by the skin of his teeth, you know? The opening of the Ark of the Covenant had to be a scary moment for him.
What's the old, was it Marx or Mel Brooks that said, tragedy is when I stub my toe, comedy is when a piano falls on you?
But what I think this movie does is it asks us to be empathetic with some of these things, and that can lead to some passion or some triggering moments for people. But it uses that empathy to kind of establish its stakes. There's a lot of people in this movie. None of these characters care about each other, so it's kind of asking us to do so, and I think it works. Just by way of synopsis, our protagonist is Kate, your typical post-millennium manic pixie dream girl, played by Zooey Deschanel, and this is at a time before Zooey Deschanel started catching a lot of hell for typically playing a post-millennium manic pixie dream girl. Upon hearing about the death of her grandfather, who is played in this movie in various stages of life and death by Rip Torn, R.I.P. Rip, Kate must travel to her grandparents' home for the impending funeral. Joining Kate is her well-meaning father, who is a former child actor who peaked at age 8, played by Hank Azaria. Also in on the funeral are three of Azaria's characters' siblings and their families, most of whom are fantastically awful people. This is where we get the ensemble of the filthy-minded brother, played by Ray Romano, his two equally perverted sons. They are joined by Lucy, played by Kelly Preston, who has a lifelong chip on her shoulder, and Lucy's lesbian fiancé, Judy, played by Famke Janssen. Upset about that lesbian union is the antagonistic Alice, played by Deborah Winger, who is dragging along her milquetoast husband and their three silent children. You're going to add in a little Piper Laurie as Charlotte, who is the mourning widow and suicidal matriarch of the family, along with a cast of other memorable extras who are all vying desperately for the role of the black sheep of the family. Dysfunction certainly on display as our main character Kate has to navigate her crappy family as well as the boy with the unrequited quat. Can't talk tonight.
Is something stuck on your tongue?
Something stuck on my tongue. The boy with the quote-unquote unrequited crush that Kate has to spend her summers with, and ultimately she has to put her grandfather to rest and deliver his dying wish, which is a eulogy from her. Now, Matt, we talked a little bit about the critic backlash here, and I wanted to walk you through a few of these. I was really surprised. This has a Rotten Tomatoes rating of 32%.
Yeah, this is a clear, like, this is one of those ones that like shows you that there's problems with that system. Because for all, like, I'm not going to say this is a perfect movie. It's a little, it's one of those films that can't quite decide how dark to be. We'll talk about a few more of them when we get to the if-then kind of section of the festivities. But it's clearly not that bad.
Like, no,
it's not,
God, no.
It's not. What can you, do you have some other 30s handy there?
You know, I think like Pirates of the Caribbean 5 was in the 30 territory, and I think Venom, which we talked about a couple episodes ago just real briefly, has slipped sub 30%, but at the time we talked about it, it was about 32.
I'm going to say it. I don't even think that's fair to Venom. maybe I'm turning into a big softy.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I don't think this is fair to this movie at all. Just looking through some of these reviews, we have one from the Newark Star Ledger's Stephen Whitty, who undoubtedly was trying to live up to his name when he said that Eulogy was, quote, dead on arrival, end quote. Oddly, Stephen Whitty wasn't that original. Witty though he may be, Lisa Schwartzbaum of Entertainment Weekly gave the film a D-, saying, if Eulogy were a sitcom pilot, it would be dead on arrival. There have been some middling reviews, some folks that the Nighthawks have had the opportunity to tip a couple of beers with. Always worth mentioning Scott Weinberg, who is currently writing for Nerdist. At the time writing for eFilmCritic.com, he gave the movie a 3 out of 5. This is one of the more favorable reviews. And he says, to quote, go in expecting not much more than a lot of breathless actors verbally sparring and sniping at each other, and you'll probably have a pretty good time, end quote. Another friend of the podcast, Eric D. Snyder, wrote, quote, a little more than a string of jokes stuffed into a contrived storyline, but a lot of the jokes are funny, so maybe it balances out, end quote. I'm a little more in Scott and Eric's camp, although I think I probably liked it better than most of them seem to. But, man, people were really mean to this movie.
I mean, I would call, like, the numerical 3 out of 5 that Scott gave it, I think that's not terrible, because you got to put it somewhere. right? Frankly, this came up as like a wild card. We wanted to do a Thanksgiving, and other than like some horror crossovers, which we're always tired of.
You know, we just came out of Monstoberfest and a bonus horror episode on top of that for Election Day. So
every year I try to get Trevor to do Thanksgiving, and every year he shoots me down.
I'm a crack shot, kid. Matt, this does bring up an interesting situation, and you kind of mentioned this. Do people lean too hard on the tomato meter as a resource? Like, what is the actual value? What is the role of a criticism aggregate like Metacritic, which actually their rubric runs a little differently than Rotten Tomatoes? But like, what is the role of a criticism aggregate? Like, is it just a way for an audience to gauge whether or not they want to see a movie?
Well, what else is it? You know, I suppose.
Is it something you look into before you go to movies?
I'm kind of at the point where I don't really. Like, I'm a, call me cynical, but I basically stop watching media for a movie as soon as I decide to go see it.
Uh-huh.
I'm a little bit the other way around. I saw one Aquaman trailer and I'm like, I'm in. I don't need the rest.
On the full Matt granularity scale, the Nighthawks, Matt's Nighthawks full granularity scale, 1 out of 100, I'm probably going to give this about a 70.
I'm gonna Price is Right you. I'm going to go 71. What do you think of that?
Oh, see, I don't know. That's the point. Like, we do this as a fun game. Like, honest to God, folks, our goal here is not to convince you to see Eulogy or not see Eulogy, or to see Hateful Eight or not see Hateful Eight, or to see Infinity War or not. Like, telling you whether or not the movie is good is really only a very small portion of what we want to do on the podcast here. Really, the fun part of watching movies for us is the experience of going, and even if you don't like the movie, talking about it afterwards. And I think we're almost slightly robbed of just kind of an immediate, like, see it, don't see it kind of format. You saw that with Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel with the thumbs up, thumbs down. And while the thumbs up, thumbs down branding did a lot for them, both Siskel and Ebert were very big fans of don't look at the star rating, don't look at the thumbs, read the review and then decide. You know, because you mentioned here in our show notes that Roger Ebert was no fan of Death to Smoochie, which is a movie very dear to both of us.
Yeah, although I haven't watched it with fresh eyes in a while. I might watch, you know, sometimes you watch something after years more of watching movies and you're like, that was less original than I thought the first day I watched it, or this or that, you know?
You know, I was actually just talking about this about 500 Days of Summer because we watched this movie and how, like, I really liked that movie when it came out. And now I'm afraid to go back and watch it because I've grown up, I've matured, and I'm a little afraid of how I'm going to relate to Joseph Gordon-Levitt as an adult and realize how much I related to him back then and how kind of he was in that movie. It happens.
I'll say this. I wish it happened more. There's no rule that says you have to commit to the thing. You're not marrying the movie.
That's true. But I did say I was kind of reticent to go back and rewatch it. I'd rather just hang on to, hey, I saw that. I liked it when I watched it. And I think I'm going to leave it there. I'm not going to revisit this. I'm not going to go back. It's like when you go back and one of our old episodes, we did a Dolph Lundgren double feature where we had the opportunity to watch Masters of the Universe, and how watching that as a, you know, as a couple of guys who are pushing 40 does not hold the same magic and majesty as it did when we watched it when we were 5 and 6, you know?
I don't know what you're talking about. It's a perfect gem of a movie.
All right. Well, speaking of a perfect gem of a movie, let's talk about Eulogy.
Guys, come on. Get in the car. We got this funeral.
Okay. Put the eggs down without breaking them.
This is why your mother left us.
She was a hack.
I know.
He picked the perfect time for this one, didn't he? Nice work, Pop.
You're doing the right thing. You're fully experiencing the loss. It's the way your grandfather would have wanted it.
To be dead?
The Collins family is together again.
Ow!
Now this is just $32,000. It's quite a steal.
How much does it cost to stick him in a garbage bag?
Hello, everybody!
To say goodbye to Grandpa.
Put up your hands. What do you think you are? Better than everybody else?
Hey, guys, I'm Lucy's life partner.
Hey, ladies. How are you and Lucy doing?
physically.
But first...
What are you doing? Don't throw a lemon at me in front of a lesbian.
They'll have to keep themselves.
I have an announcement to make.
But I can't wait to find out what YouTube geniuses are up to.
These are the people that you want at our wedding.
From killing each other.
No! Table!
Wuss!
From Lionsgate Films.
All right, that's almost enough.
Comes the story of a family.
Dad wanted us to float him out in a flaming boat.
Just like yours. Only not.
If we just try to act normal.
Guys, I just want you to know.
Dad, we know how you feel. Don't cheapen it with words. Stop it. Stop it.
I love you guys.
Yeah!
I know.
What are you guys looking at?
Deborah Winger.
I just.
Ray Romano.
No good can come of this.
Hank Azaria. Jesse Bradford. Zoe Deschanel. Famke Janssen. Kelly Preston. Rip Torn.
I love this family.
Use your aim, guys.
Eulogy.
Nice.
First off, how did this leave you?
Overall, I was pretty pleased with my movie dollar. I get why this might not be for everybody, because it's almost like being at it's almost too effective. It's like being at an actual family fight, if that makes sense. What got me is the cast and the repartee in this.
Yeah,
how
for
did you
sure.
put it? You said you'd watch these guys. What was the?
Oh, I would
say the thing you said before.
Yeah, I said I would pay $12 a ticket to see this specific ensemble do a table read of the manual for a 1983 Kenmore convection oven microwave combo, which I actually looked this up in preparation for the show, is 29 pages long.
You'd go that deep per page, huh?
Yes. And see, I just, number one, I'm a sucker for ensemble comedies. I think it shares a little DNA. I've talked on the show before about how I'm kind of a sucker for heist movies as well. Those are often in and of themselves pretty good ensemble movies. And so when you just get a lot of talented people involved, you're usually left with something that's at least watchable or entertaining. When I'm in the right mood, I love dark material. I like dark comedy. Eulogy is miles short of being flawless, but... as a streaming watch, I also wasn't expecting Citizen Kane when I sat down. And I think that watching this through the lens of, what is it, 15 years later, or just about 15 years later, it helps temper some of my expectations. Like, dysfunctional family comedy with funny lines and performances was promised, and a dysfunctional family comedy with funny lines and performances was delivered. So I really wasn't disappointed in this at all. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think that's all fair. I think it was pretty much just sheer dialogue got me into this, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was the draw for me, is just the comedy of... And at about the time I found this movie, I was really into just, like, smug things. Like, I liked this. I liked... This is about the time I hit on Plunkett and McClane.
Oh, yeah, God. I haven't thought about that movie in years. But really, there are just some really hysterical exchanges in this. The overall tone of the movie, like, it's a dark film. It deals with some dark subject matter. It deals with a lot of darker themes. And I think this movie could catch a lot of hell because the people are so awful in this movie. They are so mean-spirited. But there is an audience to be found in the April Ludgates of the world. Like, there are people who dig on this level of kind of gallows humor. Sick and twisted perspectives are out there. Like, dysfunctional families exist. And I'm pretty sure that the writer-director here probably earned his bones. These characters feel real enough that if they're not people out of his life... They're people who were close to his life. And they're a little played up for the farce of it, but the sniping is so funny. The humor is so inappropriate. There's a reveal in this that we'll talk about a little later that's kind of depressing. And it all works within the framework of the film. And Matt, like, even in funny comedies, when I'm just sitting in my room by myself watching them, like, it takes a lot to elicit a laugh out of me. And that's not to say that things aren't funny, it's just... I'm not in that mode. You know, watching a movie with an audience, you're going to laugh more. Sitting alone in this hotel room in Thermopolis, Wyoming, population 3,000.
They got a great day's in.
I was howling several jokes in this movie.
Oh, there's a couple. What was the one I sent you? Someone walks by and says something about disparaging about the gay couple that are in it, and someone else says, "Yeah, I think it's doomed. Everyone knows gay relationships only work out when both people are the same height." Which is just sort of an allusion to like Famke Jensen is cartoonishly taller. So,
well, and like these people are so awful because they're so damn selfish. Like, to a certain degree, with Zooey Deschanel being on the shallower end of this pool, and then the other siblings being on a much deeper end, there is a lot of selfishness going on in this movie. And a lot of hubris and a lot of people who aren't willing to admit when they're wrong. And there's a lot of little subtle humor in here, too. Like, at one point, Famke Jensen, who is an outsider to this family, she hasn't even married in yet. And she's just sitting there reading Confederacy of Dunces, which is famously about a protagonist who is so hoisted on his own petard that he's barely any use to society. But he's lovable. You still care for the character, even though he's kind of an... And it's just little subtle things like that are just... were a really nice touch. And I, honest to God, thought this film was clever enough that it should have been rated a little better among critics at the time.
Or when the two twin teenage boys ask her if they can intern with her. Which actually brings us kind of to a criticism, which is this uncle character is just so, and his sons are just so grody.
Oh, yeah. You're talking about the Ray Romano character and his two twin boys.
Yeah,
they are filthy, like problematically filthy. Like, somebody in this group is going to jail eventually.
It is funny, but it's also wrong, you know?
Yeah. I guess if I had a criticism, I wasn't in love. There is a love story subplot in this. And even though we have seen dysfunctional families at a funeral in film before, like, Eulogy is by no means treading new territory. It wasn't groundbreaking. It was a good example of what it is. And so we've seen the dysfunctional family at a funeral before. We've seen it exponentially less, however, than the girl coming back to the town and wrestling with emotions related to her small town past. And what's more is that we've specifically seen Zooey Deschanel in those tropey romantic plots before in better projects. Just for me, her dealing with the really crappy family life and trying to write this eulogy was the more interesting story. And the romantic plot where she has the quote-unquote unrequited crush with the kid that she used to spend her summers with takes up way too much time from the other stuff.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. And I also think it's the downfall of an ensemble movie is that it's overpacked,
mm-hmm.
right? There's not a lot you can do about it. So I get that that's a hard factor to manage.
Yeah, it's just the story wasn't very interesting, though. And, that is the one problem with seeing this movie 15 years on, is that we've seen Zooey Deschanel in these movies before where it's the boy meets girl thing, you know, like, that's out there. But if you look at the bell curve of these actors, this ensemble's, you know, individual careers, Zooey Deschanel was kind of the beginning of her rise. And so at the time that this movie had come out, Zooey Deschanel was not in and of herself a trope for a Zooey Deschanel movie. But because we have seen those movies since then, retroactively, it comes off as a little tired and just really didn't work for me.
I thought of all the subplots of the movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Her summer romance was the most, bloat. It was the most destined for the chopping block.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely could have been replaced by a little more, say, of what happened to Ray Romano, Skip's wife.
Oh, yeah. What was her name? Lily, I think. Aunt Lily.
Yeah, Aunt Lily. That's right.
My only other real criticism of this is there is, and there's a specific scene that I'm thinking of that requires kind of a stunt by one of the older cast members. And the special effects in there were pretty chintzy. Like, it's obviously it's digitally manipulated.
It's Hans Gruber tier.
And yeah, it could have been handled a little more deftly. But really beyond that, those are my only two major criticisms of this movie. Other than the fact that, you know, it's familiar territory, but I'm not going to let that work against it because it's a good example of that familiar territory.
Like, if I could sum it up, it almost feels like a workout. It's these people, they're comfortable together, they're getting a basic check for making a basic movie. Although I guess conceptually the movie is pretty mean-spirited. It reminded me, you know what another, that's a good one.
Yeah, save it for the if-then section, Sonny
yeah,
boy.
Yeah, I'll save it. But it reminded me, like, there were a lot of these kind of comedies of sort of hatred and spite coming out around this time. And they mm-hmm. were kind of, I mean, it's fun. It's fun to go there and sit there and watch a bunch of people talk to each other like Joan Rivers. I'll admit it. I'm not too good, you know?
So among this movie's positives is definitely just the ensemble. It's a good cast of good actors who are getting together, and they look like they're having a really good time. Of course, our protagonist, Kate, is Zooey Deschanel, America's darling, or America's annoying girl that you avoid at parties. This seems to be a divisive issue online. Matt, in the pro-scub, anti-scub argument of Zooey Deschanel, where do you fall?
I'm pro-scub, but I haven't watched, what's the series she has?
New Girl.
I've never seen a lick of that, so I don't know.
You know, I watched the first couple of seasons, and it was a great time killer. It was funny, it was charming. She's adorable. The other actors in the show are very competent and funny. I didn't hang with it. I can only, you know, lean on when is Zooey Deschanel going to find love so long. But I've got nothing against it. It's a decently made show.
Like, I just... Oh, it's one of those shows where they're pretty and they live in the city.
Yeah, and, I'm a little... I'm pro Zooey Deschanel. I carried a torch for Zooey Deschanel for a good long time. And to just fully insert my hipster cred here, I was doing it before it was cool. And I think some of the hate is a little unearned. But I will say that she's got a type. She's a very real person. She often plays that same person a lot. And if that's not the type of person you get along with, it doesn't really come off as charming. So, I mean, I'm not going to knock anybody for knocking it. But I can stand Zooey Deschanel, and I will even cop to enjoying her several times, both as an actor and as a musician.
I was not overly familiar with the musician.
Yeah, she's got a little music duo called She and Him. I'm not in love with everything they do, but they do actually, as we're heading into the holiday season, they do a gender swap version of Baby It's Cold Outside that makes the song a little less creepy. Which I know there's been a back and forth on that where it's like, this song's about date rape. No, it's not actually about date rape. You have to put it in context. There's a whole academic conversation there, I get it, but on surface level, it can be a little creepy. And so the gender swap on that kind of helps fix that problem.
Put some records on while I go.
Baby's my thing.
Maybe it's bad out there.
Say what's in this drink?
No caps to be had out there.
I wish I knew how.
Your eyes are like starlight
to
now.
To break a spell.
I'll take your hair looks
I ought to say no, no, no.
Mind if I'm moving?
I'm gonna say that I tried.
What's the sense in hurting my pride?
I really can't stay.
Baby, don't hold out. I bet it's cold outside.
I'd heard of them, but I didn't know it was her.
Yeah. Also in the movie, we've got Hank Azaria, who is probably over half the voices on The Simpsons. We've got Professor Frink, Snake, Mo Sizlak, comic book guy, up until recently was performing Apu Nahasapima Petalan. Really talented voice actor, really talented actor. I love seeing him and stuff. And he does a pretty good job here. He is the slightly aloof, slightly derpy kind of father figure for Kate. And there's some amazing pratfall in him keeping secrets from her, including... his career as a porn actor, as well as his habit of smoking marijuana.
I love the. So, Dad, how often do you smoke? Well, never first thing in the morning.
He's interesting. He's a former child star, but it's important to contextualize that by child star, he was not Bobby Brady. Like, he was in one commercial one time and then peaked. So he's been kind of living on that I should have gotten that second audition bandwagon for a long time, and it's led him to a career in pornography, as we come to find out over the course of the film.
He's in porn and not a porn star, so.
And he
not a great way to live.
And there is some again a little French farce with the fact that it comes up that Kate's mother was also a porn star
under the nom de porn Cookie Tushla. It's pretty.
I guess Zooey Deschanel, I guess Kate, had been under the impression that she had been a caseworker who died from caring too much.
I love when she repeats that to Hank Azaria. A lot of what I loved in this is Hank Azaria's nonverbal acting, because like when she repeats that back to him, he gets this, he snorts and he gets a look on his face that is pure, oh, shit, is that what I told you? And there's another one where he walks into a room right as the two sisters are really getting into it.
Uh-huh.
And he's eating a sandwich. And he just does this, like, downward, quick, blink and you'll miss it, like look of gratitude toward the plate of sandwich. So it's this look that very much says, I am so glad I took a bite of this sandwich before I walked into this room, because now it's in my mouth and I have a reason not to talk until I can back out.
I looked this up. It was a fun Google search, let me tell you. There is some historic precedence for the child actor who grows up to be a porn star. I'm going to do my Rush Limbaugh, rustle the paper into the microphone as I read this list. You can.
I'm rustling paper, so I have my finger on the pulse. I'm not the MSM.
Ladies and gentlemen, these are true facts. True facts brought to you by Google. Looking at child stars who went into the porno industry, we have Dustin Screech Diamond, J. Dennis the Menace North, Stephen Evil Ed Joffreys, and ladies and gentlemen, true Americans, I'm sorry if this ruins it for you all, Scott Flick from Christmas Story Schwartz. And those are your child actor porn stars.
And now we will be using Sweet Home Ohio and Spatula City without permission of the artists. Carry on.
It is also not unincredible that Hank Azaria at this time in his life wouldn't have been in porn in another life. Dude's actually pretty stacked, and I'm talking about his physical build. There is just no way gracefully out of this, so I'm just going to keep going. But the dude works out. He was mostly naked in both Along Came Polly and The Birdcage. Not an unattractive fellow, so not totally unbelievable that Professor Frink would have been doing porn in some distant reality.
You just imagine the voices, though. Like him just doing all the voices on set. You know what would be kind of hot? Is if he did a porn with the guy from Police Academy that does all the mouth noises.
I don't know how to transition out of that, so we're just going to talk about Ray Romano for a second.
And then they could get Mick Foley to do the effects. So it could be sound man versus voice man with Foley by Foley.
Did you just come up with this, or is this something you've been kicking around for a while?
No, it just clawed its way up out of my medulla oblongata.
So, gracefully transitioning to Ray Romano, who plays Skip the Skipper.
For the record, Ray Romano should not do porn.
That porn stash was actually that is a gross mustache on Ray Romano. Like, I'm not saying that Ray Romano can't grow a mustache. I'm saying that if he wants to style it like that, he's going to have problems. And maybe it's just because he plays.
What are you,
such
some
a...
kind of internationally recognized mustache expert or something?
No, but I've played one on TV. You know, Ray Romano. Love him or hate him.
Everybody loves Ray.
And most of the people who hate him because they hate him because he was on Everybody Loves Raymond, the sitcom that ran for many, many years. Now, I enjoyed the show when I watched it. I watched it when it was on. I've never really revisited it. It was wildly popular at the time. The world knows who Ray Romano is because of the show. But I really think that Everybody Loves Raymond, which is the thing that he's probably best known for, is probably the weakest show of his talent that he has in his repertoire. And
well, he was for sure like Everybody Loves Raymond, other than maybe Married with Children, where they're parodying it. Everybody Loves Raymond is the epitome of the schlub husband sitcom.
Uh huh.
So his job was mostly to get dunked on by the rest of the cast.
And that's I liked Everybody Loves Raymond, but he was okay. I was not a fan of Patricia Heaton's character in that at all, but those two were definitely the bottom tier of the characters that I enjoyed watching. I mean, we had Peter Boyle in that show for Christ's sake. I'm not watching Ray Romano. That being said, Ray Romano he's very effective in this. He's very funny in this, not for the reasons that the character thinks he's funny. The character is actually terrifyingly creepy. Matt, you noticed like a more sinister edge to him.
He has like a strong, like there's a real, and of course this is like it's an open secret that this is like a big deal in modern porn, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's a real family incest vibe here.
Yeah, it got a little really, weird there for a second,
like when the two sisters catfight and he's just straight up ogling them. Like, it's one thing when it's the sister-in-law who is undeniably...
Famke Jansen, yeah.
She's in the Momoa Hemsworth hall pass tier where no one will judge your sexuality or monogamy if you cross the aisle for them. It's one thing when he's just kind of leering at her, but when it's like starts to be the rest of the family and the porn tape of the other sister-in-law and...
Yeah, yeah. Well, and like his kids... obviously raised by him, are monsters. Like, you've basically crammed like a high schooler's hormones into like a 12-year-old body, lacking any kind of indiscretion at all. Like, these kids are vile.
They're just poop. They're basically feral.
I mean, they're probably the one character in this movie where I wasn't like, they're really just like Ray Romano, really dislikable character. But, like, the movie successfully makes him endearing in some way. The same goes for both of the sisters. The same goes for Hank Azaria's character. They didn't quite get the redemption at the end, but really they're more there for the punchline than anything. I did notice, though, that, and I hate to keep harping on it, I think this is how Ray Romano's Everybody Loves Raymond character would have turned out if Patricia Heaton had actually left him earlier in their marriage, because in both shows, he is the father of a pair of twins. Moving down our list, Deborah Winger plays Alice. Now, Deborah Winger, she's a well-known person. She's out there a lot. She's known for a lot of things. She's not necessarily a personality whose name on the marquee is going to get me to buy a ticket. But I'll tell you what, Deborah Winger nails this role. She is the bitchy aunt that you love to hate. Just puts your teeth on edge. There are moments in this movie where you want to reach into the screen and just slap her around. For me, this is a good example of emotional pacing in this, because when you are ready to haul off and hit one of the characters, somebody usually hits them. And there's a couple of times where Kelly Preston, who plays Deborah Winger's sister, will physically attack Deborah Winger. And
and they get in some... sibling fights, man. They're pretty.
And it happens at just the right time, so it's a good example of pacing. I don't know, Matt, how would you explain this character? This is a complex character. Probably out of the everybody here, she's the one that's got the most going on.
Oh, it's hard to get into without treading on the reveal. But I would say part of what's going on here is she is maybe showing the price of being a premature adult. She's a character that probably had to do a lot of sandwich making and driving to school and ho-hummery. What's her consolation prize? Being in charge. And then ultimately we find out, and she's very, very homophobic in this, like to a degree you could not probably be in a movie now. It'd be very hard. Like it's very broad paint by numbers. Your marriage is a sham. Your relationship is a joke. You're a phony version of what straight people have. And then we find out later that she herself is a veteran of a homosexual long-term relationship, and it's overcompensatory. And so we have a very conflicted person here who is a bundle of nerves. And then her spouse is a stutterer, literally can't get a word out edgewise.
Uh-huh.
And her kids are just these silent little moppets. She's just created this world that's all about, basically, all about her mouth. You know, she's not letting anybody else talk, letting anybody else decide. She's the boss, and she's very lonely because of it.
Our lesbian couple here that we keep mentioning, we've got Lucy, who is actually the one related to the family, played by Kelly Preston, who you might remember from Jerry Maguire. I think she just recently played Victoria Gotti. And also from the aptly named CBS series CSI Cyber. Can't believe they got that one past the producers. And the TV show Medium. Pretty storied television career. And then her life partner is Judy, played by, as we mentioned before, the wonderful Famke Janssen. You'll remember her from movies like the first three X-Men films. She was in Rounders, which is a personal favorite of Matt and I. Lots of TV recently, including Blacklist, Hemlock Grove, and How to Get Away with Murder. I really liked this kind of three-way dynamic between Famke Janssen, Kelly Preston, and Deborah Winger. One has to remember that it was 2004. This was not as gutsy as it could have been for 2004, but they're not playing it 100% safe either. 2004, this was a time before gay marriage was legalized and recognized in most of the contiguous United States. So there was definitely something going on here. It was pushing a few boundaries. It wasn't super edgy, but edgy enough that you probably couldn't have gotten away with this in a more mainstream film. This I guess I would call this probably mid-tier. You know, this is definitely a post-Chasing Amy world, but dealing with the fact that they are dealing with gay marriage and having to deal with that in a dysfunctional family dynamic, which is something that people are still having to face, I think keeps it prescient. And I think the fact that they made this movie when they did, and as you pointed out, how Deborah Winger can get away with being as bigoted as she is. I mean, I don't think it's unrealistic. It's uncomfortable, but I don't know that it's insincere. I think these conversations are still happening, for sure.
It's strange because it's honestly like, she has lines that, like, you'd think you're on YouTube watching, like, a Subway freakout.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because there's stuff people do not say anymore when there's been enough evolution that you don't say these things when you know you're observed, even if you are bigoted.
Mm-hmm. Rounding out our cast here, we've got the mother and father of the family. We've got Rip Torn, who is playing the deceased. He is the dead body. You'll remember him from the Men in Black franchise in the contentious film Freddy Got Fingered. He also did a pretty good turn on the Larry Sanders Show, as well as in Dodgeball. And honestly, I think Rip Torn is probably the most underserved by this script. Rip Torn is kind of wasted in this.
Both of his names mean the same thing. I just got that.
Well, and on top of that, he's a pretty good actor, you know? And he wasn't given a hell of a lot to do here. And the moments that they do find to kind of insert him or flashback or dream sequence or whatever they're doing are kind of odd. And I guess this is another criticism I have of the movie, is that the devices in which they use to introduce him as a living character aren't particularly well used or well utilized. Like, there's a scene where Zooey Deschanel is walking up to the house for the first time, and she remembers her as a little girl and Rip Torn as an old man playing on the front porch. And there are two actors, Rip Torn and a little girl playing young Zooey Deschanel, doing the tableau on the porch as she's looking at it. I don't know, Hank Azaria says something, she turns away, looks back, and they're gone. But that's the only other time, that's the only time it happens. They never really go back to that device. There's another moment where she visualizes him sitting up in the coffin and admonishing her for delivering a bad eulogy, which I believe ends up being a dream. Just little moments like that where it's like, they should have all been dreams, or they should have all been visualizations, or all been flashbacks or something. But the kind of piecemealing of it just didn't really set up a convention to use him.
You almost wonder why they paid him, because he's not in the movie, really. He could have been about anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Until they play his posthumous video. You know?
Rounding out the cast, we've got Piper Laurie as the mother. You'll remember her as Catherine Martell in Twin Peaks, also doing a turn in the seminal film The Hustler, as well as a memorable role in the TV series Saint Elsewhere. But
because now I got character fats.
So, you know,
I learned character on a hotel bathroom floor, fats.
I really liked her in this. And probably the biggest reveal of the movie is kind of an explanation of her behavior throughout the film.
And that's something we didn't really cover yet. She is already kind of inexplicably spring-loaded when they walk in the door. You know, Alice says something like, I'm sorry, I'm late or something. And she says, that's the first time I've ever heard you say that word. Sorry. And like, it's their first interaction. And you're like, why is she so bent out of shape already?
Mm-hmm.
And it's more than you can chalk up to it being a funeral, for sure.
This is actually another really clever joke in here, in that when Zooey Deschanel is asking for advice on how to write this eulogy for her grandfather, Hank Azaria, who I believe is stoned at the time, says that she should read something. It's actually Ray Romano says she should read something from Death of a Salesman, because the grandfather was a traveling salesman. And the plot of Death of a Salesman is a salesman who travels a lot and has an affair on his wife, who is actually very loving and supportive. Well, we come to find out that Rip Torn's character is not a traveling salesman, as he has been telling everyone. He actually is just living off of his inheritance, and he has three families. And he just kind of happened to die on their watch. And so the bookend of the film is Zooey Deschanel going to tell one of the other families about the other two. And what we realize, and kind of what the arc and redemption of Piper Laurie's character is that she has just found this out from the family lawyer as the family is arriving. And her suicidal thoughts and her depression are really rooted in the fact that her family has been a lie since the get-go. And so she has this suicidal streak in her that... It's played for laughs in the movie, and it's pretty funny most of the time, but you get the impression at first that she's just suicidal because her family is so crappy. But then there's the reveal of what's actually going on, and her behavior is a lot more explicable after that.
Actually, now that you put it in that light, that may well have been part of what affected this with critics, is because these attempts are kind of played for actual slapstick. Very un-PC in the modern world, you know?
Yeah. What I thought was actually kind of interesting was the two reactions from Deborah Winger's character and Kelly Preston's character when they're at the hospital, and Deborah Winger is trying to bury the fact that it was a suicide attempt, that it was just an accident. And then Kelly Preston is saying, no, she's depressed. She's suicidal. We need to talk about this. We need to make sure mom's okay. And so it's more of that kind of like, it's the pride, it's the hubris, it's the this is going to look bad if people know that mom is suicidal, so let's not tell anybody. And just kind of feeding into that. And so that dynamic is there where the bigoted sister is the one trying to bury this for the sake of saving face. And then, dare I say, the progressive sister who is trying to address the problem.
When you get down to it, I think this is so, this movie might make more sense to you if you come from one of these high amplitude families. Because like my family's nothing like this, but when they're all in a room, like I'm the quiet one of the bunch.
My family has never been particularly dysfunctional, but when we get the extended family together, there are a lot of people there, and some members of the family are a little more into that sniping and gossiping and, you know, nothing on this level. Like, I this family no way resembles mine. But these are real situations and real characters, and some people's families are like this. Some people's families are worse than this. And I think if you realize that, it plays a lot better. Like, it plays as a satire of the situations where these really happen.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very, I'm trying to think of like what the what moment or occurrence brought me to this movie, like why I recommended it in the first place.
You know, because I was a Zooey Deschanel fan, I had heard about it, but it was only released to a handful of theaters when it came out, and I think it only played about 2 weeks, and then was basically a direct-to-DVD release for most of the nation.
Well, I was going to say, I think what it keeps coming out to for me is My most vivid memory, and the reason I'm always wanting to inflict this on people, is the damn Viking funeral at the end.
And honestly, that moment, that is the payoff. The two twins being as crappy and as grody and as just unpleasant as they are, you have to think of them as a setup for a joke that pays off right at that moment, and it's the perfect payoff for that joke.
Well, I like what their dad says about it, too. When the old man requests a Viking, he wants to be pushed out into the lake on a barge and lit aflame. So the boys are complying with that. And there's a point where, like, they have little old school hand drills, and they're drilling holes into the coffin and filling it with
gasoline.
And somebody's like, is that safe? Should we stop them? And their dad's like, no, actually, this is the kind of thing they're good at.
Well, and then Famke Janssen's like, you know, maybe we'll watch from over here.
Yeah.
Before we peace out for the episode, I did want to give a shout out to a couple recognizable character actors in this. First up, we've got Rene Auberjonois as a pitch-perfect parson in this. You will remember Rene Auberjonois as the T-1000 to Avery Brooks Hawk on Star Trek Deep Space Nine, a reference that was coined by Matt that I'm sure he'll appreciate. He is in this movie for two scenes. He steals both of them. This is another one where I'm kind of wondering why they got this particular actor when I'm sure somebody else would have been a little cheaper. But honestly, it pays off here because he takes this, he owns it. The character is just an excuse for a joke, but he plays it so pitch perfect as this kind of slightly aloof and slightly unhinged parson that it works so well in here. That was one of the bigger laughs in the movie for me.
If this was pre-DS9...
It was not.
He might not have been.
Yeah.
He might not have been that hard to get. Or maybe he just wanted to do something where he wasn't in makeup for an hour.
And then Matt also making a very brief walk-on appearance in this is one Brian Posehn as the video clerk.
You may remember from Mr. Show and the Sarah Silverman Show and his own stand-up. This plug is not a coincidence. Mr. Posehn is coming to Salt Lake City the weekend of the 23rd and 24th. And his local guest act will be friend of the show, Nicholas Don Smith.
Nicholas Don Smith, friend of the podcast.
So if you are a fan of dark, dark, dark humor, you should definitely invest in tickets to go see the pair of them.
Well, that's a good way to do this, Matt. Let's talk about the if-then recommendations here. If you liked Eulogy, which I hope you do, Don't be like those critics back in 2004. Like it now. But I've got three here, if you're ready, Matt.
I'm on me.
For one, I'm going to recommend Death at a Funeral, which is one of those movies that inexplicably got an American remake. You know, okay, here's the thing, Matt. I can understand In Order of Disappearance, in order to make that more accessible to American audiences, because English is not spoken in that film, remaking it with an English-speaking cast and giving that to an English-speaking audience, like, it's not my favorite thing in the world. I can see why they do that. What I don't understand is when you take a British film where they are speaking English and remake it for an English-speaking audience in the United States. Not that the remake of Death at a Funeral was bad, it just felt unnecessary. But it's another movie that deals with a dysfunctional family at a funeral, the revelation of some dark family secrets, and farcical comedy. Arguably, this was the more successful and probably the better of these two films, but if you liked Eulogy and you haven't seen Death at a Funeral, I would highly recommend the British version. Also wanted to give a shout out to, this is a movie we talked about on the podcast before, Gross Point Blank, which deals a lot in kind of coping with mental illness and going home again and the kind of awkward situations that can come up with that. Probably a little more deftly handled rekindling of an old relationship in Gross Point Blank. And also go listen to our episode on Gross Point Blank. And then finally, I'm going to wrap it up with a seasonal offering. We're not going to be covering it this year, but if you are looking for something that is Thanksgiving themed and you have worn out your copy of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, I would recommend Pieces of April, which is a kind of an indie family dramedy starring Katie Holmes and Oliver Platt. It's about a young manic pixie dream girl living in the city, and her affluent family is coming in from not the city. And it's this kind of attempt at bridging the family after some strained times, and things are still pretty strained. And it's just another dysfunctional family get-together movie that it's heartwarming in places, it's challenging in others. And definitely in the same vein here. So those are my three picks.
Those are all good picks. I'll co-sign all of those.
Okay. What do you got?
I've got a couple. If you just like the sheer acerbicness here, then I would go with The Ref.
Ah.
The Dennis Leary vehicle where he, I believe he's a cat burglar, and he specializes in robbing people's houses where they're gone for the holidays. And he catches this very dysfunctional family home and ends up taking them hostage just before, because their dinner guests have arrived. So he takes them hostage, and then they have to go through the farce of a dinner, and he has them, I believe he ends up being introduced as their therapist. And so it's this whole family dinner where the whole time Dennis Leary is always keeping like one of them tied up and outside of the room. And then he'll go up and he'll bring in the mom and she'll do the first course. And then he'll take her out and he'll bring in like little Timmy and he'll say hi to grandpa. and he's always trying to keep leverage over one of them. And the problem is the man and woman actually hate each other so much that they're like, go ahead, do it.
Yeah, and that's Annie Potts. And because we started this episode with a content warning, we do have to warn you about some of the content in The Ref. The Ref is positive for one Kevin Spacey.
Oh, yeah, The Ref is hard R, by the way. Yeah,
yeah, that too.
I mean, there's no good solid genre connection here, but the other one I wrote down is Beetlejuice. Because, yeah, you have that element of you have the snarky gathering. You have and it's contemporary.
Dysfunctional and a lot family, of the yeah. Wit.
Yeah. Alienated daughter being the only sane one. it just has a lot of, I don't know, it has a lot of rhythm and meter in common with this, if not out-and-out plot points. And then if you just like mean shit, I'd highly recommend you check out Ruthless People.
Oh, wow. I haven't thought of that movie in years.
Just Bette Midler and Danny DeVito.
I believe I remember that VHS box. It's got Bette Midler and like somebody's holding a gun to her head and another person is like tying her up or something. And they're both wearing Donald Duck masks. And it was one of those things that as a kid, I'm like, oh, it's a Donald Duck movie. And my mom had to explain to me, no, honey, that's not what's going on there.
Yeah, the plot is that this couple feels wronged in business. And so they kidnap his boss's wife. He doesn't want to pay the ransom. He's just like, go ahead, kill her. Go ahead, kill her. You'll find out in about a week. Very dark product of the late 80s. If the team behind American Psycho decided to make it comedy. could almost get Mandela effect in a blender with War of the Roses.
Yeah, I was going to say, we've pimped War of the Roses, I think, just one time quickly in passing, but it's a weird wrap-up to Kathleen Turner, Michael Douglas, and Danny DeVito made a series of three movies. Two of them were adventure romance films, and then the third one was a very pitch-dark comedy about divorce.
What do you mean he is the jewel?
We've spoiled that movie like three times now. All right, Matt. Well, final reactions. What's your final takeaway on Eulogy? What do you want people to take away from this episode?
Oh, I think this is a great movie to sit down and watch with family. Probably won't lead to a fight at all.
I'm a fan. I recommend it. I think if you're not expecting a hell of a lot, it delivers what it asks. You know, it delivers what's promised. So that's a thumbs up from me. Actually, we can't say that. That's Ebert's thing. We even talked about that. We shouldn't be doing that. Go. You heard us talk about it. You make the decision on when you want. We're not your parents. We can't make these decisions for you.
And if we were your parents, we would be permissive anyway.
We'd be the parents be that let parents you watch HBO down like, in the basement.
They might as well drink here because they're going to drink somewhere. Remember those parents?
Yeah.
That's us.
Sure do.
Our parents were not those parents.
No. I didn't know kids with those parents, unfortunately.
My parents were more like, when you get out of college and you learn home brewing for yourself, then you can have a beer after work.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, well, be sure to catch us online, which is where we post our fake cafe conversations. That was ambiguous. The conversations are real. The cafe is fake. But you can find us on nighthawkspodcast.com. You can also download the podcast through any of a variety of podcast aggregates, including Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, several others. We are a proud member of the Hello Sweetie Podcast Network family of podcasts. Be sure to tune in to This Is the Place, the Utah-centric true crime podcast. You can also catch our sisters over at The Box talking about all things mainstream media from a all-woman panel. And, just follow along and get to know us. Find us on Facebook. Find us on Twitter. Matt, am I forgetting anything?
I think in the parlance of our times, smash that like button.
All right, let's do the coffee and pie thing, folks. We're going to sign off because it's almost one.
They got a great day's in.